From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, September 27th, 2016. We are so honored you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon yet again. On today's show, we've got a jam-packed one for you, folks, as we will recap what took place between the Detroit Tigers and the Cleveland Indians. The Indians clinching the American League Central. So what does that mean for the Detroit Tigers moving forward? How does the playoff implications set up for this team as we dwindle down the season to less than 2 weeks now? Do the Tigers even have a shot going against an Indians team that has completely owned them this year? We will chat about that. Also, I am just getting back from Spartan Stadium as the head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, addressed the media previewing the Spartans' upcoming matchup against the Indiana Hoosiers on the road on Saturday night. He, of course, touched on what took place on Saturday afternoon against Wisconsin. Michigan State suffering their, its very first loss of the season, as well as the death of former Michigan State football player Mylon Hicks. A lot of emotions in the room this morning, folks. So we'll talk about what Mark D'Antonio had to say, and you'll get to hear from him yourself. Also, later on in the show, we will talk about the Detroit Lions as they try to put that Green Bay Packers loss behind them as they look forward to the Chicago Bears this upcoming weekend. That and so much more. Of course, our phone lines are open. We're taking your calls. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, we start with recruiting news for the University of Michigan football team. Outside linebacker Baron Browning, the number 9 overall player in the nation, and offensive tackle Alex Leatherwood, love that last name, the number 5 overall player in the country, announced that they will visit Ann Arbor this Saturday for Michigan's big game against Wisconsin, a battle of two top 10 teams, folks. The pair of 5-star recruits will be joined by the number 10 tackle and number 43 overall offensive tackle, Jedrick Wills, and 4-star offensive tackle Chuck Belega. So some big-time recruits will be in Ann Arbor this weekend. We'll see how that matchup turns out between the Wolverines and Badgers. That should be a fun, fun game. All right, Michigan State football. Michigan State's home game against BYU on Saturday, October 8th, will begin at 3:30 p.m. and is the first contest between the two schools. Now, the game is slated to be televised on either ESPN, ESPN2, or ESPNU. The Cougars are 1-3 on the year and will play Toledo on Friday before their trip to East Lansing. Michigan State's 9-game home win streak was snapped on Saturday by, of course, Wisconsin. The Spartans travel to Indiana on Saturday for an 8 p.m. kickoff. Again, we will have coverage in a matter of minutes from the Mark D'Antonio weekly press conference that took place at Spartan Stadium this morning. Nelson Tony Lugila has been charged with second-degree murder in the death of Mylon Hicks, former Michigan State football player who now plays professional football, who did play professional football, I should say, in the Canadian Football League. Yeah, and he is scheduled to appear in court on Friday. Two other suspects were taken into custody at the time of the shooting, but were later released without charges. Police believe the shooting occurred after an altercation inside of a nightclub in Canada. We'll have more on the death of Mylon Hicks, and you'll get to hear what Mark D'Antonio had to say about the death of Hicks and how the MSU football program plans on honoring Hicks throughout this season. You'll get to hear that in just a second. Michigan State's men's golf team stands in first place after two rounds of the Bearcat Invitational. The Spartans hold a one-shot lead over Ohio State with a 2-under 566. Ohio State stands in second with a 2-under 567, and College of Charleston coming in third with an even 568. Senior Sam Weatherhead, how good is he, right? He had the second lowest round of his career and is tied with Ohio State's Will Grimer for first place at 6 under par for a score of 136. The Spartans will finish play at the Bearcat Invitational with one more round taking place as we speak. How about that? All right, the Detroit Tigers. Yes, we have to talk about them. The Cleveland Indians clinched their first Central Division title since 2007 last night with a 7-4 win over the Tigers. Buck Farmer allowed 4 runs in 5 innings of work. Roberto Perez, only batting 184 this year, was the hero for the Indians as he homered in the 7th and hit a 2-out run scoring single in the 8th to break the game wide open. The Tigers now sit 2 games behind the Baltimore Orioles for the second wild card spot. The Indians are 14-2 against the Tigers this year with 3 games still left to be played in the series. Justin Verlander and Mike Clevelander get the start tonight at 7:10 p.m. at Comerica Park. Detroit Pistons assistant coach Tim Hardaway was suspended 18 months. Was sentenced to 18 months probation and 10 days community service after pleading no contest earlier this month to violating Michigan's so-called super drunk driving law. He could have faced up to 6 months in jail. Tom Gorris stated that he is always assessing a potential move for the Detroit Pistons to the Little Caesars Arena in downtown Detroit. Little Caesars Arena, of course, being built for the Detroit Red Wings. Gorris said that he has gotten a chance to know the Ilitch family and respects what they have done for the city of Detroit. After purchasing the Pistons in 2011, Gorris has invested $50 million in technology upgrades, seats, and renovations to the Palace of Auburn Hills. The Pistons averaged 16,515 fans per game last season, ranking 25th out of 30 NBA teams. Wouldn't that be nice, though, to have the Pistons downtown Detroit? That'll be off the chain, if you ask me. So I'm pushing for it, at least. All right, the Detroit Lions waived Xavier Gooden today, one day after he played most of the game as the team's number 3 linebacker. Gooden had three tackles, I should say, in Sunday's 34-27 loss to the Green Bay Packers. He signed off the practice squad on Saturday to provide depth for the team's thin linebacker corps. The Lions had played the last 2 weeks without DeAndre Levy because of a quad injury and held rookie Antoine Williams out of a lineup this Sunday with a pulled hamstring. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet us at Al Martin or at WKAR_sports. So much to get to, so little time, so let's stop wasting it, shall we? Here we go. Here is the start of the show.
takes a huge heave of breath. And the 1-2 pitch, swung out of his hand, struck him out. And after a 9-year wait, Central Division title number 8 belongs to Cleveland.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to WKER's Current Sports. Here are we go. Yeah. Talk about a brain fart, right? Welcome to the show. We've got a great one in store for all of you out there, folks, as we have a ton to talk about. And to start the show, of course, what you just heard, two of my favorite moments from last night's MLB slate. First, hey, congratulations to Cleveland. I know there are many Detroit Tigers fans out there that are pulling for this team to make a playoff berth, right? But you got to give it your hats off to what Cleveland has been able to do this entire year. The Tigers are just hoping for a wild card now, seeing as though the Indians clinched the American League Central. So we'll get to that. Before that bite played, of course, you heard the call from last night's Miami Marlins game in which D. Gordon smacked a homer in the first inning, his first homer of the year. And D has, and the entire team, close ties to, of course, their teammate, Jose Fernandez, who was sadly killed over the weekend, victim of a boating accident. News that has really moved not only the baseball community, but the entire community in sports. You know, a young kid with an incredible baseball career ahead of him, suddenly passing away. And each and every player on the Miami Marlins roster donned the number 16 and even had Jose Fernandez, the name Fernandez, on the back of their jerseys last night. And, you know, you look at that game for the Marlins. They pulled it off. It was a 7-3 win over the New York Mets. Game 2 would take place tonight at 7:10 p.m. But, you know, gosh, what a night. What an emotional night as they all stood there, as the national anthem was played, as they all stood there to give a moment of silence for the loss of Jose Fernandez, and they all crowded around the mound and stood on one knee to honor him. Many tears filled the arena from teammates and fans alike. Such a tough night. And D. Gordon setting the tone last night for the Marlins, smacking that homer, and as he rounded the bases and as he came across home plate, he pointed up to the sky as to acknowledge Jose Fernandez, his friend and former teammate. Tears coming down his cheek. My goodness. Still a moment. That's a moment that we won't forget for quite some time, folks. Now turning our attention to the Detroit Tigers. Oh, boy. It has become very, very interesting. We're looking at last night, at least. Of course, with that loss to the Cleveland Indians, it seems as though every 2 years, you know, I thought this was an interesting stat that was thrown out last night. You know, every 2 years, it seems like an opposing team throws a party on the Comerica Park turf, right? If you remember the Giants in 2012 winning the World Series, I was in the house for that one. I was in the locker room for that one. I saw the World Series trophy float over my head. I got sprayed with champagne trying to interview players in the San Francisco Giants locker room. And then I went into, I never get going into the Detroit Tigers locker room in the clubhouse, and it was like a funeral. I mean, you could hear a pin drop. So I remember that Giants World Series win in 2012 pretty well. How about the Baltimore Orioles in 2014 throwing that party, eliminating the Tigers from playoff contention? And trying to go deeper into playoff contention, I should say. And now the Cleveland Indians clinching their first Central Division title since 2007 on Monday night, beating the Tigers 7-4, the final in that one. And with 6 games left, the Tigers are 2 games behind Baltimore for the second wild card spot. And it is becoming more and more difficult now for the Tigers to try and pull off something special just to get an invitation to the playoff dance. And if you're doing the math here, here's what the Tigers must do to reach the playoffs. I found this article to be very intriguing. You know, a lot of numbers are thrown out here. This is written by Brian Manzalulo of the Detroit Free Press. And the Tigers right now, of course, they have – I like how it starts off here. The Tigers have no shot at winning the American League Central, a 0% chance, right? But when you look at how – and again, take these with a huge grain of salt. I mean, these are just statistics thrown out by multiple sites that are trying to put the percentages in perspective and to give the fans some kind of hope that they got a shot at this thing. Now, according to FanGraphs, the Tigers have a 17.4% chance of reaching the MLB postseason with an 8.6% chance of winning that wild card game to reach the ALDS. Their World Series chances are, get this, down to 0.8%. Again, according to FanGraphs, all right? So, you know, they lose another game to the Cleveland Indians. The Indians have completely owned this team this entire year. The Indians are now 14-2 against Detroit this season. The Tigers at 83-73 sit two games, again, behind the Orioles, three games behind the Toronto Blue Jays in those standings. Now, there is some good news here when evaluating scenarios right now in present time for the Tigers to try and have a chance at this thing. The Orioles and the Blue Jays, they play against each other. Yeah, they will play in a three-game series starting tonight out in Toronto. So something has to give there, right? Something has to give. Somebody has to be eliminated there, right? Now, with six games remaining, the Tigers, again, they can't lose. The margin for error is very, very slim here, right? Very slim here. The Tigers have to start winning, and they have to start doing it today. They put JV on the mound. That's a good thing, though, right? He's 15-8 on the year with a 3.21 ERA. He will try and get this team started tonight. The thing is, though, it's been, you know, going back to what I've said multiple times throughout this season, it's been a catch-22 for the Tigers this year because either one of two things seem to happen all the time. Far too often for the Tigers this season. Either they have great run support and horrible starting pitching, or great starting pitching and horrible run support. There has never been, really, I mean, it's hard to point to a game where there is just a happy medium. It's one extreme or the other, right? Give and take. So I love this article because it riddles down the magic numbers for the Tigers. You know, Brian goes on to say here, and we hope to get Brian on the show this week, actually. Brian goes on to say here, what are the Tigers' magic numbers? And he goes on to say the Tigers' magic number to clinch against the Orioles right now is 9. That means they need a combination of 9 Tigers wins and Orioles losses to clinch that second wild card berth. All right? Then he even gives an example. If the Tigers go 4-2 the rest of the way, they need the Orioles to go 1-5 or worse. And then, you know, the Tigers' magic number to clinch a better record than the Mariners is 7. And the Astros is 5. He goes on to evaluate, you know, the overall competitive atmosphere of what other teams have a shot at also possibly clinching a wild card spot in the American League. So there's a ton of scenarios here. But the only thing that Tigers fans have to worry about out there, to make it real simple here, the Tigers just have to simply win. Easier said than done, right? The Tigers have to just start winning now. And, you look at this Cleveland Indians team. They've already clinched the American League Central. You wonder how this roster is going to pan out now as the rest of the year goes on. They're already in the playoffs. The Tigers are trying to make the playoffs. Are the Indians going to relax now? Are they going to rest some of those big bats? Are they going to rest some of those starting pitchers? That's a big question now because they really have nothing to play for at this point of the regular season. I mean, they're revving up to the playoffs now. They're looking past the Detroit Tigers. So how would that bode as far as the overall competitiveness of the rest of this series? The Tigers have to put all their cards out on the table right now. You put your hot pitchers, whoever they may be, you put them out in hope that they can get the job done. You hope that the run support can stay consistent. You hope that the closers can come in and do their job. This is it for the Detroit Tigers. And I'm sticking with my guns. If I had to say if the Detroit Tigers are going to make the playoffs right now, I have to stick with my guns and say no. This team is just far too sporadic. You don't know what you're getting on any given night. And at the same time, they are playing the Cleveland Indians, a team that is 14-2 against the Detroit Tigers. My goodness. And when you evaluate these wins, I mean, I want to go back to Roberto Perez. I mean, this is a guy who hit a home run on Monday night and also knocked in a run in the eighth inning as well. This is a guy who is a backup catcher for the Cleveland Indians, hitting 168. Folks, a .168 who came up clutch for the Tribe last night to give them that W and to get the champagne flowing. How unlucky is that? A guy, again, who hit a .168, delivered some of the best hits, the most clutch hits from last night's game to give the Indians now a 14-2 record against the Detroit Tigers. Crazy, right? You know, and Brad Ausmus can't explain it. Brad Ausmus went on to say this after the game. Quote, "I don't remember ever going through something like this. I couldn't tell you why. I don't know if it's matchups. I don't know if it's luck. I don't know if it's happenstance. If we play the same number of games next year, I'd be surprised if it's anything like this in terms of record." I can't explain it either. You know, when it seems as though as these games have gone on, you know, what, 16 games so far this year for the Tigers and Indians, there have been very close moments where the Tigers have hung around a bit earlier on in the game. Then all of a sudden, the Tribe just wakes up and it leads them to a win. So I'm sticking with my guns here. I don't think the Detroit Tigers are going to make a wild card appearance in this year's playoffs in the American League. If you disagree, I would love to hear your reasoning. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Shifting gears now, I want to talk about the Michigan State football team. Again, Michigan State will take on Indiana on the road this Saturday night. It will be an 8:05 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. And Michigan State, you know, playing its third night game of the season with this one. This marks the 63rd meeting between Michigan State and Indiana. The Spartans lead the all-time series against the Hoosiers 45-15-2, including a 21-9-2 record in games played in Bloomington. And, of course, Michigan State and Indiana, they compete for the old brass platoon. How about that, right? And Michigan State, they've had that platoon for, spittoon, I should say, for quite some time. So, interesting week. A week with a lot of emotions. Michigan State football team just lost to Wisconsin at home. The worst loss for this program at home since 2009 against Penn State. Wisconsin, you have to tip your cap to that ball club because they have now beaten multiple top 10 AP teams for the first time since 1962. This is a team that, of course, beat LSU to start the year. And my goodness, how about LSU, right? Firing Les Miles. I know Isaac wants to sign on that later on since he didn't get a chance to yesterday, so we'll get to that in just a sec. But, you know, Wisconsin beats LSU to start the year, an LSU team that we found to be not that great this year. And now they beat Michigan State, the defending Big Ten champs. And a tough stretch of football in the next 5 weeks for Wisconsin because they have to go on the road again this week and play the team down the road out in Ann Arbor, the Michigan Wolverines, and then get this, the week after that, they have to play the Ohio State Buckeyes. So they get Michigan State, Michigan, and then Ohio State three straight weeks, right? We'll really see how good this Badgers team is. But for Michigan State, they're coming off a bad loss to Wisconsin. They get news the following day that Mylon Hicks passes away, victim of a mindless shooting outside of a club in Canada. I mean, a lot of emotion right now. A lot of emotion. You come off a bad loss. You hear about the death of a former teammate, And now you have to go on the road this week and pick up the pieces and emotionally keep yourself in check. Virtually impossible, right? Emotionally to keep yourself in check considering what has taken place in the last few days. So I want to play a few bites from the Mark D'Antonio presser. I was in the house at Spartan Stadium as well as many other media members. And, of course, Mark D'Antonio began today's presser by first addressing the death of Mylon Hicks and addressing how the Spartans plan on commemorating his memory.
Obviously, tragic loss the other night, Mylon Hicks, and family is grieving. Our thoughts and our prayers go to the entire Renaissance community, Mylon Hicks family, and Spartan Nation, especially our players and past players as well, as we try and honor his memory. We'll do some special things here in the upcoming weeks. This weekend we'll play, you know, Mylon always, all of Spartan gear, he loved to wear black. He liked the black Spartan gear. And really that's why I wore it today in memory of him. But also we'll honor him with the number 6 on the back of the helmet this weekend. And then also we'll wear black socks, black shoes as well. But we probably traveled down there with probably 41 players, I think I counted, that played on the team with him. So he'll be in a lot of people's minds as we move forward. But Mylon's the type of guy that loved football. He loved competing. He went at it 100 miles an hour. And he would be very disappointed in us if we did not do that on a game-by-game basis throughout practice and everything that we tried to accomplish here. And go after. So he'll be with us, and you know, just a tragic event. And again, it just talks about and speaks to how life can change on people very, very quickly. And we experienced that with Mike Sadler. And now we experience that again with Mylon Hicks, and it's a tragic event. But you know, just take into account what you have now and cherish it.
Such a trying year for Mark D'Antonio and the Michigan State football team. Again, they lost Mike Sadler this past summer, former Michigan State punter, victim of a car accident. And now, this past weekend, Mylon Hicks, victim of violence outside of a club in Canada. So again, Michigan State football, and I know the question has been out there, how will the Spartans commemorate the memory of Mylon Hicks? You know, they've already done it with Mike Sadler with the number 3 and inside of the Spartan logo at home. You saw it this past weekend. And also Mike Sadler was inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame this past weekend as well. The MSU football team will wear black socks and shoes as well as wear the number 6 on the back of their helmets this weekend to remember Mylon Hicks, because Mylon loved the black Spartan gear. And I have to agree with you, Mylon. I really like that black Spartan gear as well, my man. So I'm sure he will be on the minds of many as the Spartans take the field on Saturday night. Now, getting into less important things, the X's and O's of what to look forward to for this Michigan State football team as the week proceeds here. I want to talk about Tyler O'Connor for a second here. We sounded off pretty heavily on the play of Tyler O'Connor against the Wisconsin Badgers on Saturday afternoon. For lack of better words, Tyler O'Connor was horrible. He wasn't great at all. Tyler O'Connor really, really struggled against that Wisconsin defense, a defense that I believe is one of the best in the nation. O'Connor was 18 of 38 for 224 yards. He threw not one, not two, but three interceptions. Three interceptions that I truly believe could have been easily avoided. So you immediately heard chatter in the post-game presser about how short is the leash on Tyler O'Connor now. Because Tyler hasn't been great. I mean, with the Wisconsin game aside, I mean, we've seen multiple times throughout this year thus far where Tyler O'Connor has underthrown receivers. He's overthrown receivers. He's not even looked at receivers. I mean, he's had some good moments as well. I think that operating outside the pocket may be Tyler O'Connor's best attribute to him as a quarterback. But he didn't play good on Saturday. So, of course, Mark D'Antonio addressed his thoughts on Tyler O'Connor moving forward against Indiana this weekend.
You know, I think that as a quarterback, every experience that you have is a learning experience, a growing experience. So even this guy who's in his fifth year, even Tyler who's in his fifth year, he started one game. Now he started three. He got pressured. As I said the other day, there was pressure in his face. Usually you get pressure in people's face. That affects quarterbacks. That makes them throw off their back foot. Got to do a better job protecting our quarterback, whether it's by structure, whether it's by recognition of what's coming, or whether it's just by actual execution, combination of things. Same thing happens if people get tied up down the field. If there's nobody to throw to, you end up choking the ball, bad things happen. And then there are some decisions that he has to make that have to be better. And those are the three things that always go along with the passing game. I think any of those three things can affect you. And again, it's not just the offensive line. It's the protection. Our running backs, for some reason, we're cutting people. And, you know, give credit to Wisconsin. They got good players now. And, you know, they threw some pressures at us. We didn't block them effectively, and they got home on others, beat us physically. But that's football.
I think the points that Mark D'Antonio makes are pretty good points, to be honest with you. I think the offensive line could have played better on Saturday afternoon, but at the same time, when you go back and look at the footage, and specifically, if you look at that footage of those three interceptions, I just didn't understand what was Tyler O'Connor looking at. I mean, on the 1-2, gosh, I think it was the second interception, where they're close to the red zone, if not in the red zone, and Donnie Corley is sitting there wide open. If he just floats it to Donnie Corley, floats it over the defense, he finds Donnie Corley in the back right end zone. Touchdown. Didn't see him. Forces it to a receiver underneath. Interception. Another interception where he's being pressured. He makes a sporadic move. Throws it to the sidelines. Does not see. I don't know how he doesn't see it, but he doesn't see a white jersey sitting there. Picked off. I mean, Tyler just didn't make good throws on Saturday. So it's really hard to defend him. And I now believe, and even though Mark D'Antonio didn't come out and say this, but I now believe that if Tyler O'Connor if you don't see any improvement from Tyler O'Connor this weekend against Indiana, you may want to explore other options. I don't know. Let's hit our first break. We're up at 1:30 right now. Let's hit our first break. I'm going to invite Isaac Constance, our engineer, to the show, as well as one of our production assistants, my man Luke, who was actually at the press conference with myself at Spartan Stadium. And we're going to talk about Tyler O'Connor. We're going to talk about this matchup against Indiana. You'll hear more from Mark D'Antonio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKER's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We are discussing what head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, had to say at Spartan Stadium this morning at his weekly press conference, and specifically what he had to say about Tyler O'Connor. Tyler O'Connor, his quarterback play is really one of the prime discussion points coming out of the loss to Wisconsin, because Tyler was not great. And what makes it even worse is that a redshirt freshman in Alex Hornibrook played pretty good. Alex Hornibrook was fantastic, actually. I mean, he was 16 of 26, 195 yards and a touchdown. Again, average stats, not eye-popping stats. But the way he managed the game and how comfortable he looked in the pocket, it was pretty admirable, folks. Hard to ignore. He was 3 of 3 in a red zone. How about the third down efficiency for that Wisconsin offense? They were 7 of 16 on third down. And how about that first drive of the game for Wisconsin, where they went for it on fourth down, not once but twice, and converted twice? leading to a score. So, stark contrast to Tyler O'Connor's play. Now, again, I think Mark D'Antonio is making the right move here and sticking with his guns. It's only one game. It's only one game. Tyler O'Connor is going to have growing pains. He's making his, you know, he's given the keys to the car for the first time in his Michigan State career. You're going to have growing pains. Simple as that. So I think him sticking with his guns right now is the right thing to do. You don't abandon ship. You don't jump ship as soon as you have one inkling of adversity, right? But I will say there is a huge spotlight on O'Connor going into this game. If he chucks up another performance like he did against Wisconsin this weekend against Indiana, we will have an entirely different discussion come Sunday. Simple as that, folks. I want to invite right now Luke Robbins to the show, as well as our engineer, Isaac Constance, as well. Luke is our fantastic production assistant here on Current Sports for the semester. First off, Luke, you were at the Mark D'Antonio press conference, and hey, your very first one.
Yeah.
First off, I want to know what were some of your takeaways from the presser, and what do you think about the dialogue surrounded around Tyler O'Connor?
Well, it was pretty unique, especially considering the situation. We're in a pretty somber time, you know, with the passing of Mylon Hicks and the beatdown from Wisconsin, but it was very professional, and I was really impressed that Mark D'Antonio, the first thing that he says when he comes in and he gets on that podium is he talks about Mylon Hicks and just how great of a guy he was and how he was honoring him. With Tyler O'Connor, I think the biggest thing we really need to look at is what is a quarterback's best friend? The running game. Mm-hmm. The running game was not there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can give Tyler O'Connor more of a running game, you know, take the pressure off of him, I think he can be a fine quarterback and kind of get you what you need from a quarterback.
Right.
But it just wasn't there against Wisconsin.
It wasn't. Just 75 yards in total for Michigan State on 27 attempts. That's, what, almost not even 3 yards per carry. So, I mean, they really, really struggled. I mean, L.J. Scott, a guy who has had a very good first 2 weeks first 2 games, I should say, of the year for Michigan State football. I mean, he looked fantastic in those games against Furman and against Notre Dame. I mean, Gerald Holmes was able to get loose against Notre Dame on primetime TV as well. Wisconsin, though, took away that. They have a very good defense. When it comes to that run defense for Wisconsin is very stout and very and again, I think one of the best in the nation. When you take away that, you force Tyler O'Connor to really show you what he has when it comes to his arm. And I think it was a combination of good coverage downfield and just some mindless throws from Tyler O'Connor. I want to invite right now Isaac Constance to the show. Isaac, what are your thoughts about Coach D having the back of Tyler O'Connor? Because I think logistically it's the right move here.
It makes 100% sense. It's that simple. And I said during the game, once it was apparent there was a foregone conclusion that MSU had lost and they had got trampled at that, don't put in Damian Terry. Don't do it. Because then the chatter starts to come up from the crowd saying, if he plays well, maybe he should start. And the last thing you want as a 2-1 team is any sort of divisiveness in the locker room. You don't want a player who creates a lot of friction, a lot of fracture between teammates and roster members. So I thought it was a great choice to leave Tyler O'Connor in. I think it's a great choice to stick with him. Now, if the season progresses, like you said, if it's a horrible showing against Indiana as well, then you actually have to start contemplating some major change. But at the same time, right now, it is one game. We got to pump the brakes. And Tyler O'Connor, he was the runaway victor with this quarterback position from the start of training camp. He still has that position of authority in my mind.
I think the seat is really hot, though. I'll tell you that. He ain't getting burned yet, but it's warming up.
It's
I will
warming
say that.
Up. But I don't think it's very hot either. I think he's got another game or two to test out the waters and see how much he can cool it down.
We did see, not Damian Terry, but Brian Lewerke in the waning moments of that game. So Lewerke did enter the game. Not much you can draw from that, though. I mean, it was minutes left in the matchup between Wisconsin and Michigan State when Lewerke did enter the game. So I think that's an afterthought there. But That's what a coach is supposed to do, right? At, you know, again, it's only the third game of the year. You don't want to panic at this point. And I think making a quarterback change or exploring other options right now after starting a year 2-0, that would elude an emotion of panic, if you ask me. Let's go to our phone lines right now. Let's go to line one. We've got Mike from Saginaw that wants to chime in. Mike, how you doing? Ain't heard from you in a while.
How you doing, Mr. L. Martin, man? It's good to hear from you, man.
Definitely. What's on your mind?
I know it. I was going to ask you about Wisconsin. When Michigan State and Wisconsin played each other in the conference game?
When do they?
When the last time they played each other?
Oh, it's been 4 years.
2012.
Yeah, that was 2012. 4 years. It was a 4-year gap between this past weekend's game and the last time they met.
How about Notre Dame and Michigan State the week before last?
I'm not sure how long that gap was.
Okay. I'd like to comment on the schedule there because all of a sudden, since we got 12 teams in the Big Ten and they played 9 regular season games, do you think that do you think any conference should determine a conference champion is to play how many 9 conference games or 10? Or what's your opinion on that?
Well, when it comes to the whole 9 conference games and one Power 5, you know, schedule that they've laid out, that the commission has laid out for every Big Ten team this year, I think the reason why they did that is for the simple reason of the college football playoff. When the committee sits down and evaluates what teams deserve a spot in the college football playoff, they will look at strength of schedule. And if the Big Ten is playing 9, if every team is playing 9 conference games and you're playing one team that is a part of the Power 5 conference, that bodes into strength of schedule, and they're hoping that the Big Ten will have a leg up in that argument when sitting down and making that evaluation. That's the reason why I decided to enact that this year, Mike.
So otherwise that Michigan and State going to start playing teams like Wisconsin more often than just waiting for them to play them in 4 years or I'm not saying Notre Dame is a conference game. It's not an out-of-conference game, but they're gonna try to make it a more of a true championship, right?
Right. Oh, certainly. Certainly. Yeah. And, okay. I think now with Wisconsin, I mean, you look at the West, of course, coming into the year, Iowa was the heavy favorite to come out the West and compete and go back to Indy to compete in the Big Ten championship game now. But if you look at Wisconsin and the way they're playing right now, if they come out of the stretch of football and let's say they go on to beat U of M this weekend and Ohio State the following weekend, I mean, you better believe that Wisconsin is going to be a top 5 team and a heavy favorite to etch a spot in the college football playoff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to just change gears here on the pros right quick. I know you watched Trevor Siemian play and Carson Wentz play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you think that it's early in the season yet, but do you think Siemian being a 7th-round draft choice, do you think the competition going to catch up to him like Carson Wentz because they're both rookies and Dak Prescott?
I tell you what, Mike, how many times have we seen these late draft picks turn out to be something special, okay? I mean, there are countless names you could bring up, especially at quarterback. I mean, heck, look at Tom Brady. I mean, nobody thought Tom Brady was going to be Tom Brady. You know what I mean? So when you evaluate a guy like, a Siemian, I mean, I didn't know much about the guy coming into this year. I've really gotten a chance to sit back and watch how he's been able to move that offense for the Denver Broncos, and he is very impressive. And what you look for from a young quarterback in the NFL that can allude to some long-term success is just how comfortable and poised they are in the pocket and, you know, just overall handle of the playbook. And, you know, what you hear about reports, the report that really stood out to me about Trevor Siemian is that Trevor Siemian, he knows that playbook, you know, from page in and page out. I mean, the dude studies it left and right. He was so dedicated coming into this year. I mean, he knows his stuff. You know, if he needs to make an adjustment to line of scrimmage, the coaching staff already feels confident that he can make that change. And that's what really stands out to me about Trevor Siemian.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that, man. Here's one more before I let you move the show along. Do you think Michael Vick will ever play in the NFL again?
No, that's done with. That's all. That conversation has been buried, Mike.
Sayonara.
Bye-bye to Mike Vick. I know you guys share the same name, but I just don't see him coming back to the NFL. No, that's not happening. That's not happening.
You know, it's not going to happen because I thought about before Minnesota made that trade for Sam Bradford. Why could they just sign him and
no.
get him on the Vikings?
We've seen the best of the Mike Vick days, Mike, all right? All right, my man, we got to keep
all
it moving.
All right, man, thanks for hearing from you, man. Good. I'll call you often, man.
All right, good talking to you, all Mike. Right. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll chat about the Detroit Lions. As they move forward, we haven't talked about the Lions yet here on Current Sports. As they, maybe that's a good thing. As they, of course, chalked up an L against the Green Bay Packers this past weekend. We'll be right back, folks. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, and I want to answer Mike's question. We just had Mike from Saginaw call in and was wondering, when prior to this year, when was the last time that Michigan State and Notre Dame met up? And that was actually, I didn't want to throw out a random year, but I knew it was 2013. 2013 is the last time they met. Notre Dame actually won in 2013, 2012, and 2011. And, of course, Michigan State got the win this year to break that win streak for the Fighting Irish. All right, time to talk about the Detroit Lions. Yeah, we have to, folks. We haven't talked about them yet. We had a jam-packed show yesterday in which it was just filled with callers about the Michigan State and Wisconsin game. We talked Badgers and Spartans that entire hour, pretty much. The Detroit Lions, though, they just a bad weekend to be a sports fan in the state of Michigan. I mean, unless you are a fan of the Michigan Wolverines, I should say that, because the Wolverines came up huge against a battered Penn State team, right? But the Detroit Lions, goodness, you know, and that classic Lions, though, because they gave us some hope at the end of that game when they started to storm back. At first, it was just a ridiculous blowout. I actually was flipping channels between game to game to game because the Lions really looked like they had no hope to start that game. And all of a sudden, they start to make this comeback. And how about Marvin Jones Jr.? I mean, my goodness. I see why the Lions decided to make him such a priority in that receiver core, because the kid can play from Cincinnati. I mean, he's fantastic. He made some big catches that led to the Lions storming back in that game. Matthew Stafford didn't have his best game on Sunday. But I think that when you evaluate Stafford, he's the least of the Lions' problems right now. He was a bit erratic. He had a season high, 385 yards. Again, most of that having to do with the Lions having to play catch up. You know, backs are against the wall. You know, you need to make a play just to keep, you know, to stay in the game. And Jim Bob Cooter just said, hey, you know what, let it fly. And that's what led to those big plays. A lot of those big plays came from Marvin Jones Jr. Stafford, I thought, and has been, you know, I think he's been showing some good command of the offense. And a lot of the question marks around Stafford is, okay, you lose one of the greatest receivers of all time in Calvin Johnson, can you spread the ball around? And Matthew Stafford has been doing a good job of that, I think. And we've seen some good mobility as well from Matthew Stafford. The run game, though, and Luke, you made a point about, you know, a quarterback's best friend being the run game, because you have to have a balanced attack if you want to win in any level of football, let alone the NFL, right? And the Lions really missed Ameer Abdullah this past weekend. Theo Riddick's first five carries went for negative 10 yards. He finished with 9 yards rushing, 39 yards receiving for the game. Dwayne Washington, 10 carries, 38 yards. Fullback Michael Burton, you know, he wasn't great. It just wasn't a good overall game for the Lions on the ground. And it forced Matthew Stafford to just sit in the pocket and throw the football, which he had a lot of success in doing. But if you don't have a good run attack, it makes it so easy for defenders to hone in and defend you. for me, this is a Detroit Lions team that nobody expected. I should say the logical Detroit Lions fans out there didn't expect the Lions to beat the Green Bay Packers, okay? We did expect them to beat the Tennessee Titans. That should have been a win, okay? The Lions should not be right now sitting at 1-2. They should be 2-1 on the year. So that's what stings worse. I don't really think that a lot of Lions fans turned off their television after that Lions and Packers game one Sunday, saying to themselves, gosh darn it, man, that should have been a win. You know, no, I don't think a lot of them left the tube thinking that. But what hurts is that you've lost two straight when you should be only on a one-game losing streak right now. Jim Caldwell, what's really surprising to me is that, and this is the easiest cop-out in all of sports when things are going wrong for your ball club. Who do you blame? The coach. And I've heard so many times since, you know, the post-game interviews on Sunday, so many people out there putting Jim Caldwell now on the hot seat. Now, is some of it deserving? Yeah, I mean, you're the coach. You lost to the Titans. You came out flat against the Green Bay Packers. You deserve a lot of the blame, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But I don't think that Jim Caldwell's job should be on the line this early in the year. I don't know. Luke, what do you think about the Detroit Lions and their outing against the Packers this past weekend? And what do you make of the chatter about Jim Caldwell on the hot seat now?
Well, that's tough because that game against Tennessee with all those penalties.
Ton of penalties, yeah.
You just kind of have to blame the coach for that.
Discipline.
Against Green Bay,
yeah.
There was no way they were going to win that game. You know, just the logical fan, they just can't win that game. And I think the biggest thing that I want to see from them going forward is Golden Tate, the usage of Golden Tate. Because now Marvin Jones is coming on. You know, he did have 200 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But where's Golden Tate? Golden Tate has been a player that when Calvin Johnson went down, we relied on him, or the Lions relied on him to make plays, and he won some of those games.
Mm-hmm.
So where's Golden Tate now? How are they going to try and use Golden Tate going forward? Because it's really become Marvin Jones replacing Calvin Johnson. You're not using Anquan Boldin. You're not using Golden Tate. In addition to Marvin Jones.
And we just see Boldin get involved with the offense. I think Boldin has played pretty good so far this year. He's gotten, you know, he had a touchdown reception against the Packers, on Sunday. And you know, he's looked good as far as fitting him into the offensive scheme. But, yeah, I mean, I know that Golden Tate has been absent for a lot of reasons, more so because he's on my fantasy team and I've been tracking his stats, and I'm like, dude. I mean, just the targets to Golden Tate just haven't been there. And when Matthew Stafford has been able to link up with Tate, it's been for short yardage gains, like 5 or 6 yards. Isaac, what do you make of the Lions right now, and do you think Jim Caldwell should be on the hot seat?
No, and I said that last year. Jim Caldwell's done nothing but a great job with his team, honestly. Considering the problems that he inherited, what he did in the first season, he almost is plagued by of coaching a great first year, because everybody now holds him to that standard. They say, oh, we should be playoffs every year. Jim Caldwell's coaching was a large part of why this Lions team was so successful from the jump. And then last year, the comeback to relevancy was really quite incredible as well. So the Lions, I trust them this year, should not have lost to the Titans whatsoever. You can actually blame some of that as well on Caldwell for not making the necessary adjustments. However, against the Packers, guys, I'm sorry, the Packers are the better team than the Detroit Lions, especially one without, like you mentioned, Amir Abdullah, especially one without Ezekiel Ansah. No players on the Lions yesterday had more than 6 tackles. There was no consistent pressure. Rodgers threw for 4 touchdowns on 21 attempts. This is a team that, more so than needing a bunch of changes, needs to get healthy again, get their head on right. The Lions will be fine at the end of the day if they keep on playing a good style of football. And I think Caldwell's the future direction for this team.
I like Jim Caldwell. I love the hire when they first got him. However, I will say this. I don't know if the Lions make the playoffs this year. I know it's early on in the year. It's very tough for me to sit back and say, okay, the Lions have this and that going for them, and this is why they will compete in their respective division. I don't know, because I just think there's so many holes, especially on that defense. I mean,
yeah,
that defense to me, Isaac, you know, it amazed me just how – and this was – if you remember, leading up to this game, the Green Bay Packers offense was really, really struggling. Really struggling. I mean, people were talking about Aaron Rodgers like, oh, my goodness, what is wrong with Aaron Rodgers? What is wrong with this offense? I mean, can they get it going? The Detroit Lions secondary has constantly been a step behind receivers.
Thank you.
There has been no push or pressure on the respective quarterbacks. I mean, heck, I have to look at the stats here, but, I mean, there may have been, like, what, one sack?
Yeah.
Throughout that entire game on Aaron Rodgers? I mean, that you can't win if your defense is constantly giving up points and putting you in an early hole game in and game out. That can't happen.
Well, and one player who I'd call out as well, who in my opinion had the classic syndrome of get my money and maybe relax a little bit, I'm a huge fan of him, but Darius Slay has not been half as good this season as he was last season, and he's not living up to the billing so far.
Yeah, Darius Slay, and I, before the season even began for the Lions, I had made a statement about last year and Darius Slay being one of, if not the best, cornerback in the game of football. I mean, the kid is that good. He's got,
I thought so too.
He's got that much talent. Hasn't shown up this year, though. And now they're beaten up. Now you talk about Ziggy. Mm-hmm. He's out for this team. That's going to really hurt. That defensive line, I haven't seen much from them. So it's hard for me to sit here and say, okay, the Lions are going to be just fine, because you just don't know what you're getting on a game-to-game basis, specifically when it comes to that defense. I think Matthew Stafford and the offense, they'll be fine. I like the offense. I mean, there's a lot of weapons on there. Matthew Stafford is doing a great job of spreading the ball around. Now, granted, Luke, you talked about Golden Tate. I think Golden Tate slowly but surely will get involved with the offense. But in the meantime, how about Marvin Jones Jr.? He's been great. Great
for
this team.
Top 10 signing of the offseason.
Right. Yeah. Anquan Boldin, if he gives you a good 4 to 5 catches per game, solid. That's all we need from him. How about we haven't brought up Eric Ebron, who was absolutely fantastic on Sunday against the Packers. I mean, in that first drive, Eric Ebron makes some big-time catches, and he's proven to really show you what we thought he was when he came into the league. Mm-hmm. So that offense, I think, is going to be okay. But I just have so many questions about that defense. All right, listen. Wow, 1 minute left here in the show, folks. Well, on tomorrow's show, we'll have a ton more to talk about. We will continue to get you amped up and ready for the Michigan State football matchup against Indiana this weekend. We'll talk about the Michigan football team again. A big matchup between top 10 teams in the world of college football as the Badgers get it on against the Wolverines. We'll have more chatter on that, as well as continue to take your calls. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Be easy, people.